It's time now for the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University in Greenville, South Carolina. Our speaker today is Dr. Matt Olson, president of Northland Baptist Bible College in Dunbar, Wisconsin. The title of his message is, I Have Learned to Be Content. The text is from Philippians chapter 4, verses 11 through 19.
If you take your Bibles and turn to Philippians chapter 4, I'd like to ask you to do me a favor this morning. I don't want to impose on you too much, but if you could take out a piece of paper and a pen or pencil, and right across the top of your paper, I have learned. I have learned. Sometimes we wonder, what have I learned? Some things you learn long enough to spit out on a test or a quiz. Sometimes you learn a phone number long enough to say it over and over again, so you can write it down on a piece of paper and then it's gone. But the things that you really learn stay with you. Because education isn't so much the gaining of facts, of knowledge, of experience. But real education prepares you to meet life's demands. So after you have these words written down, I have learned, I want you to draw blank. You're going to be doing a lot of that in the next couple of weeks. The Apostle Paul, in the book of Philippians, not only a great writer to give us the teaching, but he has learned through life's experience. He makes a statement in chapter 4 and verse 11. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. So I want you to write in that blank, I have learned to be content. I have learned to be content. We weren't born that way. In fact, when you were born, you came out complaining. And it's amazing how many times we complain. We go through life complaining. That was the issue in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve. It was the issue with the Israelites wandering through the wilderness and coming out of Egypt, and even when they're in the promised land, a chronic complaint. Even in Romans, when we follow the beginning part of that downward spiral to destruction, it begins by not being thankful. What's interesting is that the author, the Apostle Paul, is writing this from prison. And he is saying, I have learned to be content. You know, as I've studied this out, I don't think I really have gotten to the point where I can say that I have learned this. I'm really honest with you. But I would say this, that I am learning to be content. The Apostle Paul writes from prison, incredible physical hardships and difficulties. He knows that most likely he will face death. He does not have the encouraging words of others to fellowship with. The passion of ministry that he has had to carry the gospel to the West, church planting to Spain, has been curtailed. He does not have even the simplest pleasures of life. In fact, if you were to say his circumstance in this prison, there is nothing, in an earthly sense, nothing that is pleasant. And nothing that others would really find to be thankful for. But he has learned. He has learned, we read in verse 4, to rejoice always. You say, that's impossible. How can a person rejoice always? He has learned not to be anxious. He says, be anxious for nothing. How can you never be a worrying person? He says that in verse 6. In verse 11, we come to this passage where he says, I have learned to be content. Well, how do you do that? I want us to look from verse 11 to the end of this chapter at three declarations that Paul makes. These declarations are in the form of choices he has made in what he believes. And this is how he has learned the process to being a person who is not complaining, not whining, not unthankful. He is a person who is content. We'll also find that each one of these declarations will rest upon something he knows about God. I don't know if anyone has shared this with you, but what you think about God is the most important part of your life. It is the most important thing about you is what you think about God. Because everything that is practical that will pour out of your life in these coming years will rest upon your idea, your concept, your view of God. That's why in chapter 3 and verse 10 he says that I may know Him. So he makes these declarations, these choices, what he has chosen to believe, and he will rest that upon something great about God. The first we will see in verse 11. And this is the declaration. Paul has learned to say this. He has learned to say, I accept all things. I accept all things. When he writes in verse 11, I have learned in whatever state I am, therewith to be content. In other words, whatever circumstance I find my life in, I have learned to be content with that circumstance. And I find that quite amazing because if you look back through the history of his life since the Damascus Road experience when he became a Christian, he has been stoned. He has been lashed with whips 5 times, 39 stripes. He's been beaten with rods. He's been shipwrecked. He's been betrayed by people. You really begin to walk through this missionary journey and the second and the third missionary journeys and find that the Apostle Paul experienced incredible persecution. Beaten, stoned, whipped, thrown out of cities, put in jail. And he says that whatever state I am in, whatever circumstance I am in, I have learned to be content. He is declaring this, that he accepts all things. Not only did he have the hardships of ministry, but you remember the thorn in the flesh, the physical infirmity, all of these things. Young people, you're going to go through, and when I think about a whole new graduating class, I'm going to step off this platform. You're going to go out into some very challenging and difficult situations. Many incredibly hard circumstances. Many times of hurt and pain and suffering and disappointment. And this is what you need to learn. That in whatever circumstance you find yourself in, that you learn to be content. Your health, it can go. The struggle of academics, the authorities in your life, responsibilities that are placed upon you, relationships that will fall apart. Sometimes you'll want to cry out and say, I don't need this. I don't need this. But Paul will rest this statement because really, this kind of statement, to say I accept all things, cannot be said unless it rests upon something great. And here is the conclusion that he has about God, that God is sovereign. He is a God who is in absolute control. He is a God that is working His divine plan. He is a God that is orchestrating all of these events, the good and the bad and the hurtful and the painful, the difficult, all of these things according to the counsel of His will for your good and His glory. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 6, being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Sometimes I think back to what I feel is the most incredible story in the Old Testament. The life of Joseph. Joseph was a good kid. I mean, of all of his brothers, he was the one who had the best relationship with his dad. His dad approved of him. He was faithful. He was obedient. He had a dream. He shared that dream with his brothers, and they really disdained him because of that dream, that they would be bowing down someday to him. You know, after that experience, everything seemed to unravel for Joseph. I mean, here he is. He's living right, doing right, walking with God. I mean, what else can you do? How can you do any better than what Joseph was doing? But then here's what happens. His brothers betray him. They cast him into a pit. They sell him into slavery. He's put as a slave in Potiphar's house. He's lied about by Potiphar's wife. He's cast again into prison. And he sits there. And he sits there for a long time. In fact, if you'll take from the time that he was thrown into the pit, he's probably about 17 years old. It'd be very easy for a 17-year-old to be totally disillusioned with God. And for the next 13 years, he goes through this trial. But I believe he remembers back to that dream and the fact that God is working His plan, that God is sovereign. So when the day comes when he interprets Pharaoh's dream and they take him up out of the prison and they wash him and clothe him and they set him to rule over all of the land of Egypt, he's ready. He's not bitter. He's not angry at God. He's not been churning and chafing all of these years and frustrated with God and angry like so many people become, disillusioned, unthankful, complaining about circumstances. Then at the end of Genesis chapter 50 and verse 20, he said to his brothers, "You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good." Now we see the end. So we read through this and say, oh, it's an incredible story of the sovereignty of God. But initially, he had to rest by faith upon what he knew about God, even though it didn't make sense. And that's how he could be thankful during the time that his life was unraveling. It was falling apart. Romans 8:28. We know that all things work together for good to them that believe God, to them who are the called according to His purpose. You know, that is a great verse to give to someone else. Did you know that? And I always like quoting that for someone else. That is a very hard verse to embrace by faith. Because when you look back and see how God worked all the way through, it's easy. But that's not faith. Faith is making the declaration, learning this about God. I accept all things. It rests on the sovereignty of God. Well, Paul was one of those that was in jail in Philippi. It's interesting. He's writing to the Philippians. Remember back in Philippi? For their preaching, they're cast into prison, Paul and Silas. And what are they doing? Do you remember? What were they doing in prison? They're singing. Now, I'm sure the people that heard that got to think, these guys have absolutely lost their minds. You see, they had learned to be content by faith, knowing that God was sovereign. And God proved His sovereignty, didn't He? The jail cells opened up, and eventually the Philippian jailer and his household came to Christ. Paul has learned to say, I accept all things, because he rests on the sovereignty of God. But there's a second declaration that he makes. We find this in verse 13. He declares, I can do all things. Paul was constantly confronted with his inability And you will too. His calling was a stretch. He was never equal to his task. And can I stop here for a moment and just say to you young people, God's going to send you all over the world. Some of you in full-time ministry, but the way I look at it, every one of you will be in full-time ministry because God will strategically place you places like IBM, teaching a class, working construction, flying airplanes, working in corporate America, missionaries, doctors, nurses, lawyers. God will strategically place you as His servant. And I can promise you that whatever God's will is for your life, you will not be equal to the task. God will call you to something where you're going to be in over your head. In fact, if you leave this school and you step into something and you can say, I can handle that, then you're probably not walking out into the will of God. You watch through the Bible and you see that every time God leads His people, He will lead them in a path of impossibilities. Impossible paths that demand His grace, and God always gets His glory when He supplies that. We read back in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, in verse 1, Paul says, And I, brethren, when I came to you, came not with excellency of speech or of wisdom, declaring unto you the testimony of God, for I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and Him crucified. Here's how he describes himself. Verse 3, And I was with you in weakness, in fear, and in much trembling. You'll come to learn the verse in John 15:5, for without me you can do nothing. So I don't care if it's your academic pursuit, your finances, your work, the ministry God has called to you, physical stamina, there will be times in your life where you're going to say, I can't. I can't do this. I can't go on. You'll face that. I can mark times in my life since I left school here where I would hit a wall and I would say inside myself, I would say, I cannot do that. You know, it would drive me back to learn this principle that I can do all things. What does it rest on? It rests on what we know about God. That God is strong. God is omnipotent. God is all-powerful. God is almighty. He is the creator of the universe. Is there anything too hard for the Lord? So when Paul is walking through life, he is saying, I can do all things, not because he's capable, not because he's strong, not because he is able or talented or gifted or educated. In fact, I think that one of the worst things that you could have when you graduate here is the feeling that you've got it. You've got it all. Because you don't. God's the only one that has it all. But he rests upon this. Not the complaining, I can't do this. But resting upon what God is. And then the third statement that he makes. His third declaration. In verse 18. He says, But I have all and abound and am full, having received of Epaphroditus the things which were sent from you, an odor of sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God. But my God shall supply all your need according to His riches and glory by Christ Jesus. So we go from verse 11 where he can say, I accept all things, to verse 13, I can do all things. To verse 18, I have all. I have all. I am full. Now you think about that. Where he's writing, for him to make such an incredible statement about his contentment, from the prison he writes, I am full. All he has, probably the clothes on his back, he requests the need of a coat and books. in his prison experience. You know, I'm wondering, I think probably all of us have those times where we just kind of daydream. You know, you'll think, you know, if I could have such and such. So if we had a big blackboard and we could write on the blackboard, if I had blank, I would be content. And I don't know what it would take. Maybe half a million, million, 5 million, 20 million. You ever sit there and dream about winning the lottery? I mean, not that you buy a ticket, but you found one. And what it would be like to have $63 million. But I think that a lot of us walk through life wishing for, longing for, if we just had such and such, just had this, maybe this relationship or this way that we looked, or having this amount of money or these possessions. And we always seem to have that blank. So what would you fill it in with today? I mean, just dream a little bit with me. It's okay. What would you put in the blank to say, you know what, if that were the case, I would be completely satisfied. There's only one thing that will satisfy you. And that's God. And God alone. And God will teach you this, I believe, by bringing you to a place where He will strip away every prop in life, every facade, every crutch, every security, every relationship, to teach you to rest in Him and find your sufficiency in God and God alone. Those of you that will go out into ministry, I can remember when I left Bob Jones to go to Denver to start a church. My heart was racing because I didn't know what would take place. I'd never had to really step out in faith my whole life. I mean, my parents had provided what I had, and, you know, I prayed and we'd seen God do some things, but I had never really had to step out in faith. For a lot of you, you may get to that place where, you know, there are a lot of jobs out there, a lot of places where there's a home and a, you know, salary that's nice, and health insurance and retirement package and good insurance program. Sometimes God will ask you to step out where all you have is God, to teach you that God is enough. So how does He come to this place? How does He get to this place? What He understands and knows about the character of God to say this, I have all things, is that God is sufficient. All you need is God. I remember hearing the story about the little girl who got a brand new coat for Christmas. And she's about 4 or 5 years old, this beautiful long coat that she wore to church. When she got to church on Sunday, she saw this tall lady with a long coat. And she said to her mother, I want that coat. Now, a couple things about that. She saw one that was longer and taller, but the problem is it wouldn't fit. You've got to realize that God will give you what you need that fits your life and your calling that He has for you for eternity. And the coat that God will give you, He will give you, He will provide for you, and it will be enough. We're not living for this world. This life is a vapor, and we're reminded of that all of the time. It's fleeting. And when you invest your life and pour your life into the things of this world, you will come up dry with that. It will vanish. We live in a society where every commercial, every billboard, every TV advertisement, everything wants to create in us a desire to want more. But God is enough. Psalm 73, verse 25 says, whom have I in heaven but Thee? And there is none upon the earth that I desire beside Thee. You know, I thought of that verse. It's an incredible verse. What the psalmist is saying is that God is all I have. He is all I need. and He is all I want. I have everything I need right now to be content. Do you believe that? Young people, you have everything today. Right now, you have everything you need to be content. You look at the Apostle Paul's circumstances. I think the easy thing for us, and the reason I know is because every time I turn around, not only am I myself tempted to complain about things, but I hear complaining constantly, even among Christians. They complain about circumstances. But Paul had learned to say, I accept all things. I believe in the sovereignty of God. I hear constantly people complaining, I can't do this, I can't do that, that's not possible, we can't do this. But Paul had learned to say, I can do all things through Christ. He trusted God is strong, God is omnipotent. He's learned that. There are many times that we will say, I just need this. If I just had this, if I could just buy this, or I could just own this, that I would be content. But Paul has learned to say, I have all things. I am full. I am content. Because he rests upon the sufficiency of God. You know, there are a lot of things that you're going to have to put out on a test and on a quiz while you're here in college that you're going to forget. I mean, if I were to have to take some of the tests again, I don't know how I'd do. But there are some things God wants you to learn to take with you. And it's not just a matter of education to fill your mind, but what will prepare you for life. My challenge to you today is to get this, to fill in that blank. I have learned. I've been initiated into the secret. That's really what he's saying. I have learned to be content.
You've been listening to the Chapel Hour coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker was Dr. Matt Olson, president of Northland Baptist Bible College in Dunbar, Wisconsin. For a cassette tape containing yesterday's and today's messages by Dr. Olson, send a check for $6 to Campus Store, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, 29614. Be sure to mention the name of the speaker and today's date. The Chapel Hour has been sponsored by Bob Jones University.